This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody. What's happening?
Not creepy at all.
No, it's just a great, that's a terrific way to say hello when I'm feeling a whole lot better about myself. I was feeling so shit yesterday. I went home around 11. I recorded a really interesting interview with the president of the ACDP, Reverend Kenneth Meshwe. Someone I've kind of always found reasons not to like, you know, because I used to be this massively anti-religious guy, and I can see it now, you know. Part of growing up and developing is that you realize your own blind spots. And I always used to have this big issue with religion. I don't know why, because I've never had interactions of a bad kind with religious people, but I started to see religion as the greatest source of trouble in the world, that it was a poisonous idea, whether it came through the ideology of Christianity, Islam, whatever it was. I saw religion as a major threat to world happiness and security, and as a result, my whole narrative developed around that. And it took me a good 10 years to shake that off. And to realize, look, that's not the case, that mostly religious people just want to get on with their lives. And in fact, some of them draw from religion enormous spiritual, moral, ethical decency, which is something you shouldn't oppose. And I can't believe I was such an idiot. It took me so long. This is a big admission for me for this morning. Da-da.
It really is.
But then talking to Reverend Kenneth Meshwe, look, I don't know, you probably noticed over the last year or two that that's kind of where I've been going anyway. But Reverend Kenneth Meshwe popped by from the ACDP. And by no means does this suddenly mean that I'm going to go and get baptized in a river or end up a member of his church.
Hallelujah.
But he was, I think he was very lucid, and he made a very good point. You know, we live in a conservative country. South Africa is, whether you like it or not, a country of people with deeply traditional conservative values, whether you're talking about the rural Zulu community in northern KZN, whether you're talking about the traditional Afrikaans families who live in parts of South Africa, or if you're talking about people who are devout Muslims, Christians, Jews, Hindus, all over South Africa. These are the kind of people that the ACDP is hoping to appeal to in the next election.
Don't forget the Jehovah's Witnesses.
And of course them.
Oh, right.
Knock, knock.
Hello. Do you know we have a couple at this shopping complex just
a
up the road here?
A couple of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah. Do they live there?
No, they stand on the corner.
Oh.
And they have book stands. Oh. And if you're just...
The Lighthouse. Yeah, that's the book.
You're just minding your own business. They'll stop you. Yeah. What's the line? Do you have some time to hear about our Lord Jesus Christ?
It's like,
sorry, I just need to go and get bread. Yeah. I just need to.
Next time.
look, I'm not... It's such a weird thing. I'm more than happy to admit where I've failed and where I've got things wrong. And one of those is in my attitude, largely. I don't disregard everything that I was saying before as being somehow fallacious. I certainly think religion is still an enormous force for evil in the world. But I don't believe it is the single greatest force for evil in the world. I think that there are a lot of other things that are much more dangerous. But certainly there are some religious philosophies which are patently evil. You know, there are ideas that are encapsulated in religion that can be very, very divisive and destructive. And there are communities that have been sidelined and persecuted for thousands of years based on either their own religious misgivings or priorities, or those of the people who are persecuting them. So I do think that it probably helps to just grow up. And that's the journey I've been on. And if you've suffered my stupidities about religion,
the wrath of Gareth's stupidities.
Yeah, if you've had to endure my misery around just not seeing all of religion and criticizing it perhaps a little too volubly sometimes, then I ask your forgiveness, because it's just not necessary for me to have made you unhappy or to have questioned your deeply held beliefs on the basis that I attributed to you bad intentions. I don't think that's a good thing for anyone to do.
What? You attributed bad intentions to someone based on their religious choices.
If I attributed bad intentions to you, despite your well-held, decent religious or spiritual beliefs, then I was wrong. It's that simple. The reason I bring this up is just in respect to the fact that I spoke to Kenneth Meshwa yesterday. After the interview, I was finished. I had to go home. I was like a wrecked
ship. Not even prayer could help you.
No, I smashed against the rocks. So I went home and I got into bed and I slept. I got under like a bunch of blankets.
Did you take some drugs?
I was schwitzing. No, I didn't take any drugs. When you've got the flu, which I think is what this is, I probably got it from some filthy person on a plane.
Right.
Because it's filthy people who spread flu.
Some fecal matter on a door handle.
Filthy, filthy people on a plane. Because you breathe in their recirculated, fart-filled air. And I slept for about 3 hours, and then I had to go back into town yesterday to hear a speech by Trevor Manuel and Mervyn King.
Very fancy.
Yeah, it was. I'll tell you about that in a second. But I had to rally myself. I really had to pull myself together to put on a suit. Mm. To schlep into town. Mm. And it's just, when you're not in the mood and you're not feeling well, those kinds of things feel like an ordeal. And I know that there are people who are going through real trouble in their lives, so I'm not going to complain too much. But it ended up being a worthwhile expedition. Mervyn King was talking about corporate governance, which I've got to tell you, I understand not a single thing about. And it was like hearing someone speak Yiddish or Greek or Svengali. I did not know what the hell the guy was talking about. He only spoke for about 20 minutes probably.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the most confusing 20 minutes of your life.
I've never been, like, he was talking about colloquia and King 4 and King 5 and all these commissions that they set up. And first of all, the guy who introduced him took about 10 minutes to go through his CV. Mervyn King, let me tell you, our South African Mervyn King. This man is an extraordinarily impressive human being. And I would say we should get him in here for an interview, but I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know where the fuck to start with him.
Is he the type of person though that you can just plant a seed of a conversation and they go on and on and on?
Yeah,
good. Then we can do an interview.
I think we could talk to him. Look, he's very smart. He's one of the world's most trusted and credible voices when it comes to corporate governance. And Regenesis, the business school, has set up its own corporate governance association or institute or whatever it is.
That would be your first question. So, Mervyn,
corporate
governance, hey?
And then he just goes. And let him go. And anyone who can understand can stick around, and anyone who doesn't can just drop off whenever they feel
the need. He's 81 years old now.
Jeez, he's impressive.
Doesn't look it.
And you know, usually the first line of Wikipedia will say, so-and-so is an actor, full stop.
Yeah.
This is Mervyn Eldred King. He's a South African corporate attorney, arbitrator, mediator, corporate director, commission chair, author, and speaker. And that's just the start.
He's director of like a million boards. He's been chairperson of just about every important. He's been at the United Nations. He's incredible. So he is the patron of the Regenesis Business School's corporate governance, whatever it is. I mean, I forget the names.
Yeah.
And then they gave Trevor Manuel the Lifetime Achievement Award. And, you know, he got up and spoke maybe for 10 minutes, but he's so good. I remembered this man as he was standing up there at the lectern. I remembered him delivering budget speech after budget speech and making sense. And our country was in surplus once when he was finance minister. We were making more money than we were spending. Can you imagine a time like that?
It happened.
Yes. The economy was growing, I think it's 6% a year once when we had a brilliant, smart man like Trevor Manuel in charge of the finance.
What are we on now? 0 point something, right?
0.0000009 or whatever it is.
Did he speak at all about Maria?
She was there. He brought her along. Oh. You know, they're married.
Mm-hmm. Maria Ramos.
She's just stepped down as ABSA CEO, and the MC joked that she was still wearing ABSA colors. She was wearing like a red and white jacket. But I said hello to them both briefly afterwards. Trevor Manuel embarrassingly, this sometimes happens to me, not always, but he embarrassingly called me out while he was introducing to say what the motto on our coat of arms is.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how he knew that I was, maybe he didn't, maybe he was just, I was a well-known face to him. I'm not sure. But I care about heraldry. You know this. Mm-hmm. I know about our coat of arms. So I said, well, it's just unity and diversity in Khoisan.
Ike.
So he asked you what it was in front of everyone.
Yeah.
That is when I sit on the Googler in 2 seconds.
Yeah, no, for sure. Siri, but anyway, he's very nice, said hello, and I said hello to Maria. But I didn't want to do the picture with them or stand and talk to them afterwards because I was feeling so sick. I needed to get the hell out of there. So I literally said thank you to the organizers. That's Regenesis. And I just got out because I wanted to get straight back into bed. Mm. I was in bed at 9. Sorry, I was in bed at 5 to 9.
Ooh,
the power went out, load shedding at 9, and I woke up this morning at 4:30.
Very good.
Mm. That was nice.
Rejuvenated.
Yes,
and Regenesis.
Yes, very good.
Because load shedding in my area yesterday and this morning just made it feel like I lived 9 lives in the past couple of hours. It was just scrambling to get things done before the lights go out. And then my neighbor isn't home and they have an alarm system that has just gone on and off because of load shedding. And it's now at that point where it's using the backup battery, and the backup battery is now low. So there's this annoying beeping sound.
I've got it myself.
So the entire night, that's all I was hearing. I feel like beeping. I could have just smashed my head up against the wall.
Well, how about this? Think we all experience load shedding.
Yeah.
But a friend of mine, her borehole water is connected to the electricity.
Uh-oh.
So when the power's out, she can't shower. Okay.
Yes. How's it connected to the electricity?
Don't ask an engineer. I have no idea.
Sure.
sure. Also, if you might be in an area where the towers go down during the power outages and you no longer have signal on your phone or any way of using a dongle or an external modem.
Sure. So you're stuck without the internet.
So you can't shower. You can't work. You can't, you're paralyzed, basically.
Well, this is the big problem. And you know, Trevor Manuel kind of intimated this. He didn't exactly go guns blazing into the government and say how crap they were. But he said we're in a broken country, which is an honest thing to say. We are. We're living in a broken country where the ANC are solely responsible. His party are responsible for that ugly situation we find ourselves in. Nothing works because this government has screwed it up totally and completely. And I asked Kenneth Meshwe about this yesterday. Kenneth Meshwe did not mince his words. He said the reason we've got this problem with Eskom is because the ANC politically got involved in a parastatal to the extent that they had all the white engineers fired. A lot of those people quit and left and went overseas to find other employment because they decided they weren't wanted here. And because we've lost those engineers, now Eskom doesn't work. And President Cyril Ramaphosa said something similar not so long ago. He said we need to bring these guys back so that they can help us fix Eskom. Because now we've got a group of really, really incompetent, politically appropriate people in Eskom who don't know what they're doing. It's like putting the lunatics in charge of the asylum. And really, that you can argue this as much as you like. This is where political philosophy leads you to dangerous places where things don't work anymore, and it's very uncomfortable for some people who are political ideologues to come to grips with. But your policies, while they look great on paper, and you could talk about equity, and you could talk about quotas, and you could talk about affirmative action and BEE, when it comes to actually providing electricity to people, all of those things I've just mentioned have proven themselves to be abject failures in respect of Eskom. I don't think that is a contentious point of view. The evidence is in. It is factually and credibly inappropriate for anyone to assert the opposite, that changing the demographics, the look of a business like Eskom, and I say business in inverted commas because it's really a terrible example of a business, but to make it look politically appropriate, which is what a lot of people think is what we should be doing with our sports teams and so on as a priority, it has profound effects on competence. Not because black people can't do these things in Eskom. There are plenty of capable and able black engineers in South Africa. I just don't think they're working at Eskom.
They've got nicer jobs elsewhere.
Well, that's the point. And why would they work for a corrupt, badly administered parastatal when they could work for a private company that will pay them and treat them with respect?
Yeah, I don't think anyone wakes up and says, you know where I'd really like to work?
Escort. Right. No one. Unless you're a crooked politician because you realize you can dip your toes into the honeypot and you scoop up huge amounts of money for yourself. So while we've lost good white engineers, and there are good black engineers, I don't think we've replaced good white engineers with good black engineers. Instead, we've just replaced white people with black people, which is just deep racism. Mm. That's all it is. You can't put it any other way. It's just racism. And I see Phumzile Van Dam, the DA, continues to fall just without any ability to grapple onto any hard surface to pull itself back up. The DA is falling down Alice's well so fast they don't know what they're doing. Phumzile Van Dam yesterday says, I'm going to read the tweet because it's too, I don't want to misquote her and give anybody fodder for saying I'm wrong or the context was wrong or anything else. Listen to this. This is Phumzile Van Dam. She's the communications boss of the DA or whatever. Critics, she says here. I don't know who she's addressing. Probably me, because I think the DA deserves to be criticized. Here are some facts. So it's very defensive, straight up, right? She goes, the DA's parliamentary caucus will look significantly different from what it has looked for the fifth parliament. It should have said, has looked like, but let's not dwell on little things. The list handed over by the DAIEC this week comprises 50.5% constitutional blacks and 49.5% white people.
Oh.
It's such strange language.
Yes.
Constitutional blacks.
I know. First of all, what's a constitutional black?
Are you a constitutional black and you just haven't told us?
And why aren't blacks also people if whites are referred to as white people? Mm. And plus, when did the DA become a party of race? When did this become the philosophy of the second biggest party in South Africa? They are going to lose, and I'm not talking about white people, you're going to leave them. Anyone who doesn't like race-based stuff is going to say, well, you know what, Phumzile? That's not what we're interested in. I don't care how many of you, I really don't. I know people always go, oh, please, you see people say that. I don't give two shits how many people in the DA's parliamentary caucus are white and how many are black.
Yeah.
I don't care how many look like me. I'm not an idiot. What? You know, there's that old story about the forest. Mm-mm. The forest kept getting smaller and smaller, but they kept voting for the axe because its handle was made of wood, so they thought it was one of them.
Okay.
You heard that story, right?
No, I haven't either.
Well, it's an old idea. It's nothing new. But this is Phumzile. That's a stupid idea, right? Isn't it stupid?
Is that the analogy you have about where we are? Because then we are screwed.
I think this is how Phumzile Van Dam, she thinks people who might have voted for the DA, she's trying to win votes. This is just before an election. She thinks people care about what percentage of the party in parliament is black and white. Who's she trying to please here? Racists? That would appeal to racists. Yeah, why would 49.5% whites matter to me? I don't care. How many ministers in government are white now? I don't know. I haven't looked at it.
But the point as well is that it's 50-50. So leave it alone. Why even point it out?
What are you boasting about? I mean, how stupid is this? Phumzile Van Dam, you're embarrassing. Really?
Mm.
And you have a surname of a martial arts.
Well,
she is Jean-Claude's ex-wife.
Let's not hold that against her, please. Let's judge her on other things.
No, it's just bizarre. It's just so weird, right? I don't understand this at all. What a stupid thing to be talking about on Twitter, like it's something to be proud of.
Clearly, it is something she holds.
Well, then she shouldn't be in a party that declares itself to be non-racial. Because if your party says it's not about race, then how come you're making it about race?
Mm.
Just then join another party, because maybe the DA is not for you. Or maybe the people who vote for the DA should realize that maybe it's time for them to not be there anymore. Find something else.
I think people who are more informed are not going to be surprised by the results after the elections. But for a lot of us, and I count myself in that lot, I think we'll be surprised by the results. We're going to see a lot of changes.
Well, among the things that Kenneth Meshware from the ACDP said yesterday is he reckons...
By the way, it was surprisingly short.
He's quite a short man.
It's my first time seeing him in person.
But he's a nice chap, you know. He seems like the kind of guy who you... And he did say to CNI, if he's wrong about this, he's going to take us for lunch.
But let's he serve said, him some crow as well.
He's predicted the ANC will not get their 50% majority in this election. And he said if he's wrong, he'll take CNI for lunch. So we'll keep you updated. All right. Hey, Gareth, I'm having marital issues this morning.
Oh, no.
Only this morning?
This is from somebody. My mom had moved in with us when my son was born in October and has been a massive help to my husband and I. She cooks and cleans and takes care of the baby all day while we work. My husband's mother, on the other hand, is a piece of work. She judges all my parenting moves and has had a few bouts of not talking to my husband, sometimes 6 months at a time, due to her selfish ways and downright nastiness. I hope I'm not biased in this situation, but my mother-in-law rocked up at our house yesterday because my mom was not answering her messages or calls, clearly due to load shedding. She brought her brother to see our baby, and I politely told her when she arrived that she could also call the house phone next time. She's worried that my mom has gone missing. She sends my husband a message to say she thinks there might be drama and hopes she's done nothing wrong. What the actual fuck, says this person. All right, Leanne, advice. Yes, all right, advice from Leanne Moll. Let's go.
Leanne Moll, relationship expert.
Yes,
right.
Mother-in-laws can be notoriously difficult. We know this, especially when they start judging what you're doing in your family. The key here is to distract her. How to distract her?
Okay.
Make everything about her.
Ooh.
Ask her every day about her life.
Yes.
Be really interested, even if you have to feign the interest.
Yes.
Ask her, how's she feeling today? How was that doctor's appointment that she went to last week? Distract her. Let her talk about herself and she'll forget about your issues.
That's a very good idea.
I don't know about Leanne Mould.
All right, Sia's advice now. Go ahead, Sia.
I think this is quite rational, but get your husband to talk to his mother. Because if it comes from you, it might seem like you're the bitter new wife in the equation. Or if it might be your mother, it might be like, oh, well, of course your mother sides with you on this. But I think it would take a different front should it be your husband stepping up and say, listen, mom, we appreciate you, we love you, but these are the boundaries and you can't go over them. You know, you can't just rock up at the house unannounced.
You've had your chance at building a family. Your chance is over.
Oh, the mother. Right. But mothers will always meddle. It's just about setting that boundary.
Meddling mothers.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
But look at us. We have an amazing track record.
I have no advice. So take Leanne's or Sia's and maybe a combination of both and see what works. I have no advice on this. The idea of mother-in-law is ridiculous to me. Like, I would ever listen to someone else's mom or even frankly take someone
listen to your own mom.
Yeah, I mean when you're in your own family. I mean I'd take my mom's advice and stuff where I know that she'd be constructive and helpful. But when it comes to this sort of thing, this is not constructive. This woman she's being a problem. I don't think you're wrong. You look at this and you can from your side of the story, and I haven't heard hers, she seems like a meddling old bitch.
Yeah, but you can't say that to her face.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. You see, that's why I'm not the right guy.
Listen, Glenda, we love you and all, but you're a meddling old bitch.
Glenda, get out of here.
You know, there's certain bitch. Granny words. Glenda, Sheila.
Yeah, get out, you're
Meryl.
Bitch.
Yeah. Edith.
Can I ask for some advice?
Oh, okay.
Ooh, the help desk is open.
Go on, Leanne.
Just further to our conversation this morning on the state of the nation.
Yes.
I have family in Australia, I've mentioned them before.
Yes.
Who left South Africa. Yes. And we were the only family unit who didn't leave.
Yeah.
The other four went.
Yeah.
And the one member in particular is now emailing my dad on a continuous basis, telling him how shit South Africa is.
Yeah.
And he's pointing a lot of fingers. He left South Africa such a long time ago that he is surprised to hear that I have black friends.
Jesus.
So that's the mindset.
These are very backward people.
Yeah. So that when he left South Africa, people weren't friends with blacks.
Leanne, do you want you and I to send him a selfie. Yes.
It's like that.
He probably wouldn't know what to do if he saw that. Maybe he'd get an erection.
He'd have a fall down the stairs,
or yeah, something would go spaz like out. His body would react in a way he didn't expect.
Yeah, and it just angers me because
like an old school racist.
You know, he's pretending that, or the guise that he's using is that he's fearing for our safety.
Yeah, but
and he wants to protect us.
But you know that's not true.
I know it's not true.
What he's really doing is he's using
justifying his own.
Correct. Every bad story he can find about South Africa to make it look like he made the right decision and you didn't. That's all.
Here's the latest message, and my dad sent this to me 1 minute ago.
Okay.
He sent a video called Red Alert. Be prepared for a state of emergency in South Africa. Yeah. So I haven't watched that.
Yeah.
The message he sent then says, not much more I can tell you, Anton. I've done my best to warn you of the impending state of emergency. Oh. There will be no elections. Oh. I pray you have taken some of my advice and prepared for a disaster of biblical proportions.
Oh, my God.
You and the family are in my thoughts.
Right, so
my dad responded, hi, Brent. It's 3:20 a.m. and I was awake when my watch picked up your message. Your concerns are valid. Thank you. We will remain vigilant and keep you informed. Please remember that my circumstances are such that my mom, my dad's wife, my mom, Nola's condition is of prime importance above everything else. That because my mom was recently hospitalized. Mm-hmm. We are no longer mobile until she has improved. Hence, we will take our chances. We live in the wisdom of uncertainty. Therein lies the key, as predictions will abound with doomsday versus optimism positions. Love to all.
Well, your dad's very sharp. But look, a lot of these people who have, and we are seeing a massive exodus of people. I meet with people I've known for years who are deciding now that their plans are finally coming into play in terms of them getting the hell out of here. Because when you get home and you don't have electricity, you look at the situation, you go, this is ridiculous. It's 2019. Having electricity is a basic thing. Mm. It's a very basic thing. If you can't get power and you can't get water, mm-hmm. it's time to go and find a place where you can get power and water. And the whole point of being a citizen of the world is you can choose whatever place works for you. So I have no problem with people who are emigrating, moving around, trying different places out. I've got friends. In fact, out of all my varsity friends, there were maybe 10 of us that were really, really close during varsity. There are probably 3 left in South Africa. And these are all capable, smart people. We're talking engineers, doctors, advocates, really useful people who would have been contributors, first of all, to the tax base in South Africa, and second of all, to the productivity of the country. They're gone. They have left. They're never coming back. One of them is in Houston in Texas. One of them is in Vancouver in Canada. One of them is in London. One of them is in Australia, in Brisbane. One of them is in New York. These are all people who are, and they're all over the world. They've chosen different places to live because they want different things from life. Some of them like cities. Some of them like the countryside. Some of them want to be where their business is going to thrive the most. But South Africa no longer forms part of their calculations for prosperity. And that's fine. Mm. I have no problem with that. But once you've made that decision, it isn't your business to be persuading other people to. Mm. Just as it isn't our business to persuade people to come back. Let people make their decisions. And I used to be very cross with people who emigrated because I thought once that patriotism was a good thing, just like I once thought religion was a problem. Mm. And I think that was wrong. Patriotism is a stupid thing, especially in 2019. You don't need to be patriotic. Being born somewhere is not a good reason to support something. And there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that this government is a complete and utter failure. The ANC as a party is a complete and utter failure. It has outlived its usefulness. But that does not mean that you can't find opportunities in the mess that they leave behind. There's going to be a lot of work for people who can do things. And there's going to be a lot of money for those people too. And you've got to find a way to make it work for you. That's all there is to it. So I feel bad for your uncle.
Mm. Goodness, but Australia. A message like that.
I mean, to be sending things like that, which is essentially just, that's frightening people. That's what he's trying to frighten you. And it's all about him.
Look, I predicted this. I've told you everything I could.
Disaster of biblical proportions.
I mean, what a douchebag.
This is how I feel.
Yeah, I know you do.
And I don't know how to retaliate and if I should even bother.
Just leave it. Because for him, you see, he also has the time. Because he's not trying to make a living and do important. He's kind of semi-retired, as you explained to me once. Not really doing anything useful.
Yeah.
So he has time to reply to your messages with a long, well-thought-through, you know.
Mm. Doomsday, yeah, there will be no election.
You don't need that. You don't need
He's also an avid Trump supporter.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I just say just start sending him selfies of you and black people.
Yes, that's a good idea. Yeah. All right, so a couple of things you need to know today. The death toll has risen to 89. There are hundreds of people missing as the cyclone that started in Mozambique has now moved over to Zim, Cyclone Idai. The death toll in Zimbabwe is 89 people.
Yeah, it's even higher in Mozambique. It's around 400.
Yes. The leader of the Interministerial Task Force team, July Moyo, claimed that the number of dead and hundreds of missing in Chipinge and Chimanahani... Chimanamanani districts of Manicaland. I'm not sure where that is.
It's all made up.
Yeah, it sounds almost like it's a J.K. Rowling novel, but let's just go with it. Cyclone Idai formed over the Mozambique Channel before moving inland via Beira on Thursday last week. The Interministerial Task Force says the cyclone has led to massive destructions of infrastructure, including homes, clinics, schools, roads, and bridges. Government, corporates, and individuals have come together to mobilize aid for the victims who need food, clothes, blankets, toiletries, and water, among other things. So there, I mean, that's just awful. An update for you in case you were wondering. Etoll's collection company applied for 1,400 default judgments for blacklisting. Yep, the ETC, that's the Etoll's collection company, has said since May last year it has been issuing between 2,000 and 4,000 summonses to Etoll users who ignored notices to cough up.
Oh dear, I'm one of them.
Yeah. The ETC, which collects Etoll on behalf of South Africa's National Roads Agency, said since about May last year it had been issuing between 2,000 and 4,000 summons per Etoll users who had ignored notices. Quinny Vermaak, who's in charge there, has said more than 15,000 summonses had been sent to court for Etoll users. The absolute worst thing is to ignore the summons, he says.
Oh dear.
The absolute worst thing. Like stabbing yourself in the temple right between the eyes wouldn't be worse than that. But he says, no, the absolute worst thing. What we've seen over the last 2 months is summonses that got ignored. We've received default judgments by the courts, and the automatic impact of that default judgment is blacklisting.
So what do I do? Do I pay the outstanding fees? And am I locked into this forever?
No,
can I get rid of my little beepy thing?
You can support ARTA, and they will defend you. Because they're actually lodging they've currently got a pending challenge to the lawfulness of Etoll's, which is being adjudicated by the courts. And they have questioned why these default judgments are being obtained against motorists while there is a pending challenge. So ARTA are trying to fight this as hard as they can. And they'll probably win because there isn't massive support for Etoll's.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been a number of situations where the Etoll collection company found themselves in trouble with the law as well. So, while we're talking about cars, you've got to tighten your belt because we could pay 98 cents more for petrol in April.
I don't know what to do.
It just keeps getting more and more expensive to live in the ANC's South Africa. The AA has warned South Africans to brace themselves for another petrol price increase. And by the way, if you think I'm being unkind by making it the ANC's South Africa when petrol prices go up, and you say, but that's not because of the price of oil. No, it's because most of the price of petrol in South Africa is actually a government surcharge on petrol.
Is that what people who ask about the petrol price sound like?
I think so. I've met them before. They sound like that. Very nice people.
Sounds accurate.
The AA warned of a possible steep increase in fuel prices for April. Motorists are just getting accustomed to the recent 74 cents petrol price increase. They could be expected to pay an additional 98 cents per litre in April, bringing the cost to 15 rand 80 for a litre of fuel. So apparently the predicted increase is quite substantial and will come as a blow to consumers. I think consumers are already embattled, and there have been a number of other increases. Well, I'm getting rid of my car, I'm telling you. I've been talking about this for months.
You've been saying this a lot.
I just haven't had a chance to, but I'm going to. And I'm going to get something small. I'm serious. You can get one of those little electric cars or semi-electric cars, whatever they're called,
mm-hmm.
and you could charge them at home from a plug point.
Well, and it can give when you the electricity's off?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
You didn't think about it.
That could be a problem.
Okay. So that's the one problem. The other thing is it's about more than your car. It's about the trucks that are delivering food.
Yeah. Yeah. And, no, you know, I know that. But I'm thinking, how can I save? You know, I can't do anything about the food price.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find a way. But yeah, I'm thinking seriously, there's got to be a way. And maybe I must get an inverter at home, and maybe I must put solar panels on the roof. Someone told me it'll cost like $100,000. But over a period of 2-3 years, out of 2-3 years, you'll pay it off, and you don't have to be reliant on Eskom anymore.
Hmm.
Yeah. And then, this is interesting, I wish Anthea were here to talk to us about this, but former Steinhoff chairman and top shareholder Christo Wiese is opening negotiations over his $4 billion claim against the company. South African retailer said on Friday an independent report found that it overstated profits over several years, in a $7.4 billion accounting fraud involving a small group of top executives and outsiders.
Shucks.
So obviously, as the largest shareholder in Steinhoff, with a stake of about 20%, Visa was particularly hard hit by the more than 90% crash in the company's stock price. He acquired the stake in 2014 when he sold his company Pepcor to Steinhoff in exchange for shares. I would expect Steinhoff to give me back my money, and I will give them back their worthless shares, Visa told Reuters. But everybody knows the company does not have that kind of money, so our approach has been, the only way forward is for all the stakeholders to sit around the table and reconstruct the company. So there we go. Steinhoff has declined to comment on this, but Cobus Visa going after his money that he's owed from Steinhoff. And then the Christchurch mosque killer called Mandela a terrorist in a hate manifesto. Now,
this must have been some time back.
I'm always worried about looking at the hate manifesto or
the motive.
I don't want to explore why these people, and by all means, you could see this guy is a white supremacist. That's enough for me. But he wants us to read his bullshit thoughts. He wants to spread his ideas. That's why he wrote this thing before he went in and killed 50 odd people in a mosque. We know he was a very big anti-Islamist. He was a big white supremacist. Doesn't surprise me at all that he didn't like Nelson Mandela. And he did email this thing to the Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, or whatever her name is. He talked about Mandela being a terrorist. He expects to be freed in 27 years from his incarceration, the same number
what
of years as
Mandela. What business of it is his?
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand. I think that
I do. Mental illness.
Yeah, it could be. But Brenton Harrison Tarrant was the guy's name. And I think to look too much into his manifesto is to give him too much credit. I don't know that anything in that manifesto is going to be valuable. I think it's all going to be just hateful and, yeah, it's the kind of stuff a troll would put on
the internet. We won't be surprised by what we find out.
You don't need to read this stuff. But the fact that he mentioned Mandela is just very odd. So I hope it doesn't draw us into this, because we don't need to be involved in his shit. So there we go. Those are the five things you need to know today. You might have noticed we've stopped giving the cryptocurrencies.
Well, we'll
report once something really interesting happens there, all right? Over to Sia in Said by Sia. What do you got for us today, Sia? You want to take it away?
Sure.
All righty then. Go on, as you were.
Congratulations to a newlywed couple in Cape Town, Munir and Mariam. And they really had anything but...
Are we turning this into a private dedications part of the show?
Oh, no.
Or do you know Munir and Mariam?
You'll see exactly why I'm sending the congratulations to them.
If it's your birthday section. Okay.
And then we'll end off the show with our in memoriam as well.
Okay.
Munir and Mariam, who recently got married, I'll say that their wedding was anything but ordinary. It wasn't at a courthouse.
Yes.
It wasn't at any sort of religious building. But a hospital.
Why? What happened?
That's quite an intense backstory, but it ends off on such a sweet note. This all happened just a few weeks ago.
By the way, it looks like the most unhappy wedding I've ever seen. The two of them are grumpy as hell.
The two of them and a handful of people in a hospital ward. But it happened a few weeks ago in the early days of March when, unfortunately, Munir was attacked on a Saturday evening and brought very hastily into the trauma unit of a hospital. Sure. The medical team say that the main priority was just to ensure that he was stabilized and that there was a good clinical outcome. But while they were doing this and they saw his partner at the time just outside very panicked, they discovered that actually they were planning on getting married the next day.
Oh, wow.
How unfortunate. This all happened, by the way, at a botched robbery. They were at home, it was a botched robbery, and this is when the soon-to-be husband was attacked. When the hospital heard about this and had finally stabilized him, they thought, we aren't going to let them suffer any longer.
Yes.
And they said, screw it, we are going to make sure that your wedding still happens, and we're going to make sure that it happens here.
Mm.
I think that's so sweet. So it's a Melamed Private Hospital actually started organizing this makeshift wedding for them in a matter of hours.
That's
they
amazing.
Even called in a nikah. This is someone
nikah?
Who N-I-K-K-A-H. This is someone who gives a blessing at a Muslim wedding ceremony.
Okay.
And they got their family and friends to the hospital as well. So there's this sweet post that the hospital has shared on their Facebook page. They see, like, they actually made a makeshift aisle for the couple.
Oh,
he's
in the bed.
He was wheeled down the aisle in his bed.
And that's how he went down the aisle.
I agree with you, Sia. Nice, happy story.
And their family and friends are supporting them in all of this. So I think out of this rather glum situation that arose, they were actually able to have a sweet ending at the end of the day. So Munir is actually doing well as well. And he's now officially married. So congratulations to them.
Well done.
An unconventional happy story, I'd say.
Well done to the hospital staff. That's amazing, because we know how busy people are at hospitals. So for them to take the time out is really cool.
They say it was the first wedding ceremony held at the hospital. No surprise there. And something very special that they will remember. The medical team, nursing and staff all played an integral part of this event. And this is just sweet.
Aww.
Yes.
Aww.
I know.
All right, good.
That's your set by Sia for this morning.
Thank you very much, Sia. All righty. I'm wondering what we should do now, because we've got a couple of things that we could talk about.
We could go for a champagne breakfast.
I
can think of
that?
Three things.
Yes, we can go to Bora Bora.
Okay, we can do that too.
I like the sound of that.
We got a new episode of Blind History later on that I've got to tell you about. Can I give you the
synopsis?
Oh, yeah. Okay, it's another episode.
Here's a little throw forward.
Ooh.
Blind History is a crash course in getting to know history's great men and women. And by great, we don't always mean good. In the series, Anthony Medera from Taylor Blinds and I will tell you the stuff the history books sometimes leave out about these important people, the sordid stories, the less well-known details, some of the stuff they didn't teach you at school. In today's episode, well, his reputation has been downplayed by both the National Afrikaner regime that succeeded him and the Free South Africa that succeeded that. But for those prepared to dig a little deeper, Jan Smuts may well have been one of the greatest people to ever emerge from this country. If you want to know why, you can go to cliffcentral.com for Blind History. It's brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. This guy really was fascinating. I don't want to give away too much because the episode contains so much stuff. But Jan Smuts was just an absolutely incredible, brilliant mind. He was easily one of the smartest people that they've ever managed to measure IQ with.
Hmm.
He was a philosopher, he was a politician, he was a war strategist, he was an excellent orator, he was a very sharp mind, and did so many things during his life that it's very hard to condense it all into a single episode. But, you know, we want to refer, and in the first four episodes, I think we've done two South Africans, Shaka Zulu and Jan Smuts.
Mm.
We've also done two ancient sort of, well, one of them was ancient history, one of them was more medieval. We can look at some women in the next series.
Women's.
Women's. Mm-hmm.
If you can women find some that weren't burnt at the stake or decapitated.
Yeah, well, those are your ancestors.
Called crazy. Yeah.
No, there were a lot of women in history who managed to, despite the fact that history is largely about men and about war and about things that, you know, clearly were male biased, there are stories about some very extraordinary women in history too. So those are coming up. And we look back into ancient history and we look forward into much more recent history. But Jan Smuts, obviously within the last century, and a guy who was the only man to sign both the Foundation Treaty of the League of Nations after World War I and the United Nations after World War II. He's the only guy there at both of those.
Remind us why Jan Smuts Airport changed its name.
Well, a lot of places, what happened was that South Africa, and Canthen Pillay actually referred to this the other day in the Burning Platform, in part of the discussions around CODESA and the negotiated transition in South Africa, none of our airports would be named for politicians.
Okay.
That was a decision that was made. So Johannesburg was the name chosen for Jan Smuts Airport. DF Malan in Cape Town was changed to Cape Town Airport. I can't remember what the one in Durban was called, but I know that the airport in Wilderness was called Pier Via Buerta, George rather. And they changed that to George Airport. So it was all geographically named. And that was part of the negotiated decision. You know,
Louis
Buerta was Durban.
That was the Durban one, sorry.
Random. Correct. So they changed that to Durban International Airport. So everybody was happy for a while because it was Joburg, Durban, Cape Town, George. We knew what that was. Anyway, somewhere in Thabo Mbeki's term, they decided it was time to honor Oliver Tambo, and they went against the agreement that was forged in 1990 to 1994. And they decided to name it after O.R. Tambo. And then we have this whole situation now with Cape Town. And do we name Cape Town Airport after Winnie Madikizela Mandela?
Mm-hmm. Now the new things of supposedly naming it after Nelson Mandela.
Here's the problem. The problem with this too is not just that it's only a South African issue. Remember, international guests. I was on this plane back from Zurich on Sunday to South Africa. They don't care. O.R. Tambo's fine, but if you put Winnie Madikizela Mandela, they're not going to remember it. They're going to go Cape Town Airport anyway.
The poor foreigners.
Because I remember landing in Mauritius once, and I remember the name of the airport in Mauritius is Sir Siwu Seger Ramgulam.
Right.
Yes. All right, now I'm a guy who loves reading signs, and I'll say it over and over again until I can get it right. Sir Siwu Seger Ramgulam. Now that's a ridiculous name. I mean, I looked him up afterwards to find out who he was. He was one of the first political leaders in an independent Mauritius, and he established a number of institutions there, and he's very widely regarded. But honestly, to do that is just ridiculous, and most people don't care. They're going to say Mauritius Airport. I'm the only douchebag.
Port Louis.
Outside of, well, it's not even in Port Louis.
Oh.
I'm the only idiot outside of Mauritius who knows the name of Sir Siwu Seger Ramgulam. No one else cares. So we've got to be careful. I mean, I think it's just such a dead end. And to give politicians, because remember, politicians, they come and go with the tide. If you name something after a politician, unless they're a huge international statesman like Nelson Mandela, or someone who isn't a politician like Desmond Tutu, I mean, why they don't think about him for these things, I don't know, because he's a Nobel Peace Prize winner. But I think to name these things after living or recently dead people is dangerous, because they could always be changed, and then you've not only created a pedestal for them, but you've then broken it down afterwards. It's not a good idea. And build new things, as Canthen Pillay said the other day on the Burning Platform. Build new things and name those new things after people, like the Gautrain, and you know, and let's put up new highways and name them after Adelaide Tambo, and you know, do these kinds of things, because I think that will show that there is progress. These are things that were built in the new South Africa that we can now say we're proudly adding to the value of the infrastructure of the country, and then name it after political leaders that have that have been part of that struggle and who have contributed to the new South Africa. To take old infrastructure, colonial infrastructure, name it after leaders post 94, people are inevitably going to say, well, what have you built since then? And that is embarrassing.
Well, and it's an important question to ask.
I think so. So I think these are things that we need to look at very carefully. But anyway, Jan Smuts, he used to be the guy that the airport was named after, and that changed to Joburg, and now it's changed to OR Tambo. So that's the long story for Leanne's question.
There we go. Thank you.
And if you want to know more, you can listen to The Burning Platform from 2 weeks ago, where Canthan and Pumi and I were talking about this very thing. Might just interest you. Alrighty. We got a ton of stuff to get to next. Rachel Colisi, Sia's told me, she had like a meltdown.
Oh, man.
So she is on a rant after she found some woman in her husband's DMs. Aye, aye, aye. This is, you know, I've got to tell you, this social media, it's opened up a can of worms for relationships. I haven't been in a relationship for, what, 4 years now? I can only imagine the suspicion, the dangers, the trouble.
Oh, it's horrible.
The secrecy that must go on in relationships with people who are being messaged by other people outside, the third parties.
Even comments on their own posts.
And, yes.
And girlfriends being told by other people that their husbands are cheating. Or, yep. I've spotted your husband last week at this restaurant with this woman. You might want to check it out. People telling on each other and information. And, oh, yes, just be single. That's the way I feel about it because it's too much work.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's changed everything about our relationships.
And
work.
How hard it must be for people to just be monogamous right now. I have such respect and admiration for people who can keep a relationship together. In the world of social media, it's just unbelievable. So, we'll talk about that. Sia Colisi's wife, Rachel. We'll talk a little bit about Trevor Noah. We'll talk a little bit about President Ramaphosa, and he got caught on a train.
How do we have sympathy for that?
Well, it's just funny. It's hilarious. Yes. And George W. Bush, who's talking about immigration in a positive way. So, all of that and more on the way. CliffCentral.com. It's Tuesday morning. It is the 19th of March, 2019. Stick around for a whole lot more good stuff. And if you have anything that you'd like to add, call us on 0861-555-189. The lines are always open.
This is CliffCentral.com.